particularly school groups coming from out of state, were coming to the Clinton Presidential Library before or after they went to the Central High National Historic Site, Central High School National Historic Site. Okay, they were pairing us together. And to be honest, sometimes we were an afterthought. They were doing a civil rights tour. We just had a group yesterday who spent a couple of days in Memphis, National Civil Rights Museum, came here, Central High, and then came to us. And so we created programs. And I have, instead of a PowerPoint, you each are going to get this limited edition commemorative
autograph.
I will autograph it later if you want to have it as a collector's item. This is something that we do annually. We do an educator's evening in August, and we hand out an education program guide. And it lists all of our offerings for the school year. And so we were talking earlier about banks, sponsors. We all need money. But I'm going to point out a couple of things that are in here and permanent tours that were developed to kind of take advantage of what school groups are already doing and make that connection. So when you have them, it'll take just a minute for you to have them. What we did is create two different tours. One with Central High School National Historic Site that's called the Little Rock 9 Congressional Gold Medal Tour. When you're on, when you visit the museum later, you can see one of the Congressional Gold Medals that was awarded to the Little Rock 9. And this happened a couple of years after the 40th anniversary of the Central High crisis. And because of President Clinton's relationship with the Little Rock 9, he was allowed to present them their medals. They're awarded by Congress, but he presented them to the Little Rock 9 at the White House. And so what we do is if we know, we allow teachers to book a tour where if schools are going to both places, when they come here, we talk about the impact that event, the Central High crisis, had on President Clinton as a young man. He had just turned 11 in August of 1957, so he's about to start school at, I think, probably Ramble Elementary at that point. And he's watching this unfold on television. And you can see it, you can hear him say it in his own words in our orientation film. I usually read from his autobiography, My Life, but he talks about the impact of watching that, seeing that great injustice, seeing it righted, and knowing that he wanted to play that kind of role, that he wanted to work for social justice in the future. And so that's a great connection that we can make with our backyard. And, you know, if they haven't been there yet, we kind of introduce them to the role that President Eisenhower played. If they have been there, we're reinforcing that. We never call it repetition, right? We're reinforcing what they've learned. And so that's a great opportunity where we're stretching a little bit, right? Because at that point, I'm not really talking about President Clinton as president. I'm talking about President Clinton as a young man, and I'm talking about another president and a historic event. That's not a huge stretch. The next program is a little bit more of a stretch. And if you turn with me to page 16, you're going to see the listing for the Congressional Gold Medal Tour, but right above that, you're going to see a tour that's called The Best of Both Worlds. In 2008, Heifer opened? 2008, So we have a neighbor, a great neighbor. They're very sweet. They actually gave us some of their property to have our staff parking lot. We are indebted to them forever for that. Heifer International. Are you familiar? Anybody familiar with their work? Okay. If you're not, we can talk about it later. But they are an international nonprofit that works to end poverty and hunger around the world. They have a very specific method to do that, and it involves giving live animals to people, and they have a motto of passing on the gift. So we once they opened, and they have an education village there, Heifer Village, it's their education center with exhibits and programs, people were coming here and there. And we also had a challenge here that we had groups that wanted to come here that were larger than we could handle at a single time period. So we partnered with them and created the Best of Both Worlds. And the idea is that if you have this if you're bringing every fifth grader from your district, or maybe every fifth grader in your school, there's some really big schools in Arkansas, right? So you have 300 fifth graders. Well, 150 of them will go to Heifer and 150 of them will come here. And so we created a program to draw connections between the two. And when I say it's a little bigger stretch, I'm not talking about President Clinton as president. I'm not talking about President Clinton pre-presidency. When we're making the connection to Heifer, we actually are talking about President Clinton post-presidency. So talking about the work of the Clinton Foundation, which is also an international nonprofit that works to make the world a better place around the globe. They're working around the globe. So helping the students make that connection and connecting President Clinton to what's happening literally in our backyard. If you could see, I'm pointing that way. If you could see through the wall, you'd be looking at Heifer. So if you could see through the wall, you probably wouldn't be here, right? Okay. If you had superpowers, I'm just saying, X-Men style. And then last but not least, I want to think about this beautiful space that we have here. I'm so glad that our session was scheduled for the Great Hall, because we have an ongoing partnership with Parkview Arts and Science Magnet High School. And this grew out of a program that we did in 2008 in connection with an exhibit called The Long Struggle. We did what we thought was going to be a one-time Black History Month program. They have an amazing, it's an arts magnet school, so it shouldn't surprise you, amazing music department and amazing drama department. And they have two teachers that work closely with each other, Carolyn Foreman and Fred Boozy. And they created for us this amazing combination of song and spoken word. So an actor portrays someone in history, does a vignette, and then you hear a song. And it's the full choir and the orchestra that participates in this. So we're talking about, including the actors, we're talking about 150 students, high school students, who give us 2 days out of the school year. They come every February. It's become a tradition. They come and do a program here. We bring in other younger school kids to see this program. And it's themed, the theme always has something to do with Black history, but we try to tie it into the presidency. And we also tie it into, thinking about the general session that preceded us, tie it into commemorations. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot. This past year, we talked about Lyndon B. Johnson, and we talked about the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which will be 50 years old on my birthday, July 2nd this year. And so it's not, we've never actually, they've never portrayed Clinton. It's always a historic event, but it's somehow connected to the presidency, and it's somehow tied. But like Linnea said, bring in the families. We do school programs on Thursday and Friday. Thursday night, that's our friends and family night. So I want you to imagine the cachet. You're a high school student. You're performing on a stage here, and your parents and grandparents are here watching you. We print programs, not for the school performances, but strictly for the friends and family. And we have to print about 5 per student, because the student wants to put one in their portfolio. Mom wants one. Grandma wants one. You know, it's, and all their names are in. It's not really a program. It just has the run of show. It has every single name, every member of the choir, every member of the orchestra. And it's huge for them. And it's great for us. I mean, it's a win-win. It's a two-way street. Like I say, sometimes we have to stretch. I always have my civic literacy binder, you know, blinders on, so I don't get too far astray. But yeah, sometimes we stretch. But those partnerships and making that those connections locally has served us. Mm-hmm. Has served us well.
Thank you. Can I stand up?
Sure.
I'm actually getting tired of, a little tired of sitting. That was great. Roger, I love the idea of the naturalization ceremonies. We've done several of those here, and they are very powerful. I mean, it'll bring tears to your eyes to see that. And so we'll fill this hall with, I don't know how many we've done. I think we've done over, our largest one, I think we had over 150. And, of course, they bring their families and that sort of thing. But it's a very powerful experience, and it's something that any presidential site can do. So it's a great idea. Kathleen has done a great job of making sure that people who come here relate to the president. And you heard firsthand what all she has been able to do about bringing it home to the student and making it to where the young students can relate. Because we think of all, you know, like President Clinton being a recent president, but the majority of kids coming through here weren't even born. So, you know, we've got some of the same challenges that other presidential sites have. I mean, it's, yeah. Now, President Clinton is still a global citizen and doing good works around the world, and that does help us from a national or international component. We still get a lot of international visitors and that sort of thing. But the challenge, just like all other presidential libraries and sites, is to get the local community reengaged. And that's been a challenge nonetheless, because you got to keep them coming back. How do you keep them interested? Part of the way, from an educational perspective, is through what Kathleen's been doing, thinking of new ways to engage with the teachers, with the students, with the families, and that sort of thing. But we look at, from a foundation perspective, we look for partnerships. And she talked about that a little bit. But we look to go out in the community and find partnerships, like with Central High School or Parkview or Heifer or some of our sponsors, to try to couple things together. For example, any of y'all have heard of Crystal Bridges Museum? It is a phenomenal place. I mean, it is unbelievable. And it's crazy to think that it's in Arkansas, period, or this part of the country. But we've started partnerships with them. Why not trade things? They aren't very presidential, but they're historic. And so we can trade items and share part of the things we have here with them, and vice versa. We had an exhibit recently where we had one of the famous George Washington paintings here. And so that's the kind of, you got to think outside the box to really think on those partnerships. We also partner with foundations, nonprofits, and also other museums, and even corporate citizens like banks and that sort of thing. We have Bank of America here because Arkansas is still fairly rural. You go 60 miles, or actually 40 miles outside of Central Arkansas, and you're very rural. So getting school groups to come here is sometimes a challenge, not only from a time frame, but a financial responsibility or challenge. So we have this partnership with Bank of America since we opened. They provide grants to any school that needs assistance with paying for the bus driver, paying for the fuel to get them here. That no one has ever turned down. You just got to fill out an application. And instead of having money come straight to the foundation, they have this money set aside, and we've used it quite a bit. So that helps bring people in. That's a way to think outside the box and do that. The next thing we do is we have to have ways to bring the community back, and you'll see, you've heard probably of some of our temporary exhibits, which Kathleen has the challenge of putting together educational curriculum around some of them, which is a stretch on some of them. But they all have a tie to the president itself, and it may be a logical tie, it may be not so logical. But we bring things like Lego exhibits here. Who would have ever thought you'd have had a Lego exhibit at a presidential library? And it was wildly successful. We've had Dr. Seuss, which is probably one of our favorite ones, in terms of educational components. Now, you try making the tie from President Clinton to Dr. Seuss, okay? But we found a way to do that sort of thing. Well, it's like threading a needle, but you got to find that logical tie-in to make it fit. And we've had baseball exhibits, space exhibits. And these are not things that cost. Some of them cost a great deal. Some of them don't. And it's this partnership we work with as a foundation. We work with the National Archives, and they will help curate, help put it together, help it narrate it so it can tell a story. We're just the idea folks and saying, oh, let's have a Seuss exhibit. Now, how are we going to do that? And so it's a team effort to put it together, to make it flow, to make it tell a story, make it educate people. We've had things like, for example, the Space Camp exhibit. That didn't really cost us a dime. We went to Huntsville. We literally used things in their warehouse that they were going to dispose of in 10 years, brought them back. All we had to do was pay for insurance and shipping. I think Terry Garner went and got the moon rock herself, right?
It was one of the museums.
Okay. So those are the sorts of things that you got to think outside the box to make it relevant, and it's not cost prohibitive. So we had space capsules, we had, kitchenette things from the shuttle era, we had things from the Apollo era, all throughout this place. Then we had space camp. So we included all the children here and had a week-long space camp, which was wildly successful. So those are the kinds of things that we've been trying to do here to think outside the box and attract. Now, we talk about new amenities. We've got to have the new Ferris wheel. So every couple years, we're trying to think of something new. Well, the bridge was one of our Ferris wheels. You know, it's something new that attracts people to the park. And so that was put online in 2011. The wetlands down, which you can't, it's hard to see from ground level, but you can see when you're in the library or you can walk down to it. It's a great educational resource on an urban wetland and how it's supposed to work. And so it gives children who come here as bus tour or school groups something else to do, something else to learn from. You'll see that, Debbie Schock has, the kids come in here for lunch. Well, Debbie said, well, let's just put a bunch of picnic tables out there and we'll keep them out here a little bit longer. Well, that's what happens. So you'll have sometimes 200 kids sitting in picnic tables throughout the park. And so those are the kind of, I wouldn't call them innovative, but they're maximizing the opportunity for that when kids and when school groups come in to see this place. So what do we have online coming up? Well, we've got the Anne Frank Tree, which is, again, a partnership with Central High. We're the only state, I think, in the country with two Anne Frank trees. And so we're going to build an exhibit. It's going to be an exhibit outside that talks about the importance of the tree, the significance of it, history of Anne Frank, that sort of thing. And it's going to be right there in front of between the school and the National Archives building over there. And then three, we make ambassadors out of people. And that is our bread and butter. We're creating ambassadors every day, like Phyllis Britton in the back. She's been volunteering here since we started. Well, we have hundreds of Phyllis Brittons. Now, not to the quality that she is, but we have a lot of people who have giving of their time and their resources and talents, devoting their time to come and telling the stories about the present, telling the stories about the presidency itself, the center itself, what all we're doing here. And also, like Phyllis, she knows him. So she can say, well, President Clinton, she can talk directly about the president prior to him being president. So it's that relationship that we have. The other great investment in ambassadorship that we have is the school over there. That school is the Clinton School of Public Service, and it was the first school to offer a master's degree in public service. And it was the first school that was located, moved from a traditional school setting to a presidential site. Okay, we aren't adjacent to a university. Didn't have prior affiliations. This school moved here onto this campus and has now had approximately 250 graduates. Now, why is that important? They are immersing themselves in the community. They're ambassadors to the Clinton Center, they're ambassadors to the Clinton name, and they're going out and doing field projects throughout Arkansas that they're required to do. They're also doing them throughout the country, which they're required to do, and they're doing internationally. And guess what? Here's the trick. A lot of them come back and stay. And so we bring people from the outside of Arkansas coming back into the state, and they'll stay here for a while, which is good. Arkansas has a problem. We lose our best and brightest, like a lot of other states, to other places. They grow up here, and sometimes they're educated here, and they leave. Well, the Clinton School is bringing that back, is bringing some of those people back, the ones that go off to Harvard or Stanford or that sort of thing that had no intention. So that's the kind of ambassador with our volunteers and with our students, with our teachers. That's how we're relating back to the community. We're building relationships with the community, and we're always open to new ideas. I mean, someone says, you need to get a partnership with the zoo. Well, we got to figure that out. You know, if we have, we've had a working relationship with the Museum of Discovery, which is a great little museum right down the street. So that's kind of, we're trying to be all things to people locally, knowing that the international visitors and the national visitors are still going to come. I mean, President Clinton's traveling the world, and he hears about people's interaction, visitors' interaction with our volunteers. He'll come back and tell a story about, oh, I met so-and-so in Prague, and they commented on Phyllis, who introduced me to X, Y, and Z. And so that's the real-world application that it's taken. And so that's why it's important to have the ambassadorships, to have the immersion inside the local communities, and still tell what's really important, to make sure that we're still telling that historical and educational component and tying that all in together so that it's not forgotten. So with that, are we now for questions?
There was one that I had come to mind while everyone was talking, and I'm curious about what you think the greatest misperception in your local community is about your site, and what kind of steps or thoughts you've had to correct that misperception. Is that a tough one?
That is a tough one. I know within the museum community, I think there is the misconception that because we're a federal institution, that we have substantial funding and a large staff. To be clear, I am technically a department of one. I'm one education person that's paid by your tax dollars, and I appreciate that greatly. During the school year, I'm allowed to have a part-time graduate assistant, and the foundation employs two full-time and one part-time person in their education department. But as Linnea mentioned, I started my career at Historic Arkansas, what we'll visit tomorrow night. I supervised a staff of about 15 people, and I wasn't even the education director. There were like a couple of layers above me. So when the library opened, I think there was a misconception that we would just have this huge staff and endless supply of money, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not the case. We have to be creative and thoughtful in the partnerships that we do. And if you're clever, Bob Beatty kind of alluded to this earlier, if you're clever, you can partner with someone and they do like three quarters of the work and you take half the credit. That's my favorite kind of partnership, just putting that out there up front. Roger?
It has to be a funding because we receive no state or federal money. We're a not-for-profit, and so everybody thinks, well, why don't you do more? You've got everything. And like I said, we were a staff of seven, and, you know, I've always kind of thought we were kind of like the MacGyver of museums. You know, you just kind of cobble everything together, and, you know, you have to be frugal and maximize your money. And it really is a challenge to try to do things that's quality, but do it in a where you're a good steward of the money. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think our challenge from a foundation's perspective is that this was a presidential site like this was so foreign to Arkansas, I mean, in terms of a mentality. And so we had to open people's perspectives, and we had a challenge about educating people on the value and importance of this. They saw it initially as a political entity, and we had to overcome that. And then once we get over that hurdle, I mean, this park, you'll see people using it. It's a 30-acre park. It's wonderful. And it is a city park. But up until a few years ago, really until the bridge came online, people liked to look at it, but they didn't like to actively participate. And the same thing, I mean, you'd see people standing on the curb with their arms down looking at the grass. I mean, you can play on it, actually. And so I think likewise, there was a unfamiliarness or maybe a formality associated with the presidential site, and so we had to help break the mold on that. And I think that's the biggest challenge, and it took us longer to do that than I probably would have thought on the front end. I thought that was something that, you know, look, people are worldly, they travel, they understand, they do their research, and not so much to the degree that I thought. So,
well, and we still have. I'd say it's down to about once a month
It used to be once a week someone will come in the front door and ask about getting on the internet. Because if you go if you go to the public library, you can get on the internet. And then we have to kind of, you know, break it down. We're not that kind of library. Unfortunately for us, our public library is literally just down the street. You can just say, just follow Clinton Avenue, look for the big building with the author's names around the top, and they'll let you get on the internet there. But yeah, just that concept of a presidential library. The initial reception that I got from educators, I couldn't get in with the social studies teachers, but the media specialists, which is what they call librarians now, the media specialists were like, oh, will you come and speak to our group? And of course, I didn't say no, because I thought if I can get in here, I can sneak around there, I'll reach them somehow. But a lot of misconceptions about the word library for us.
All right, questions? The microphone, I think, is going around.
Yes, Phyllis, our delightful volunteer we've alluded to several times.
I'm Eric Montgomery from the boyhood home of President Wilson in Augusta, Georgia. One of our biggest challenges is getting field trips, school children, to come. They don't have the budget. It's not really in the curriculum. They can't figure out how to fit it into their curriculum code that they have to follow. It's just a big effort, and I'd love to hear the tricks that you have found in trying to get field. And now, you know, I realize we're a very small site. We're not a presidential library. We're not Monticello. We're never going to be. We're probably more like Benjamin Harrison. But I'd love to hear some ideas that maybe we could translate down into our smaller site and staff.
Well, one thing that I have just been blessed with is the state bicentennials in 2016. And we were awarded a six-figure grant to provide transportation and tours to three sites, including ourselves, and I'm the manager of it, for every child in Marion County or downtown Indianapolis. And being a multi-year grant, that has been, you know, that's a real shot in the arm with the down economy. I will tell you that in the past few years, I have done a lot of traveling. I'm starting now to take the programs to the schools. And that is not my first wish, because I want them to visit the home. But if they're using the curriculum, that also is important to me. I try to be very flexible. I go to them. They come to us, getting people like community foundations to help out maybe, or have a... One thing we've started doing is having volunteers underwrite the field trip costs for their grandkids' school. Something as simple as that. The other thing that I do, and I'm kind of weird if you haven't figured that out yet, I write a handwritten note to every teacher who comes. And I, at the end of the day, I'm not sure if people will remember what Benjamin Harrison, who he was or what he did, but I want them to remember that they felt good there, that they had a positive experience. And sometimes it's rare, especially, and I'm very, very charged up about this, being married to a public school teacher. Public school teachers are so assailed upon. And I mean, I think in my lifetime, they may be blamed for 9/11. I mean, it is just, it's the only group that you can really rail against and not be in trouble for doing it. And just saying, hey, thank you for what you do. You know, thank you for taking your time. You know, as my wife says, it's a good thing I like you, because I wouldn't come to you. Mm-hmm. Because it is such a pain to fill out in triplicate legal forms for the parents to get on the bus. It is such a pain to go out of the building. You know, I try to make it easy on teachers. When they call, give me your name and what date. Everything else, I'll take care of. I'll look up all your contact information. I'll arrange your lunch on the lawn. You know, whatever I can do to make your life easier, I'm going to do. It's more work for me, but I think over 20 years, I've developed a relationship with teachers. The biggest thing that will hurt you is when a teacher retires, is getting that lag, getting that next person to come in. But if you can get on that, and by word of mouth, I wish I had the magic bullet for you, but it's everything. You know, it's kind of, if you make it easy for them to get there, any time, I don't like to say no. You know, it's like sometimes they have these outlandish requests. If it's physically possible to do, I will make it happen. And I think at the end of the day, it's about relationships, and especially with them.
I'll jump in on a little bit on that, too, because I've been thinking a lot about how we can use, and this goes off of what Jordan was saying earlier, teachers as ambassadors for us. And so if there's any time when we're bringing a small group of teachers together, I try to see that as just the beginning and see what I can actually encourage them on concrete steps of spreading the word of what resources we have, either on site or online. The other thing that we just experimented with and is free, still trying to see how it's going to go long term, is Google Connected Classroom. You don't need to have a huge setup for media, like your own media distance learning field trip type of program going. They take care of a lot of the technical sides of things. It's you don't receive any revenue for it, but it's a way to already reach a group of teachers who's gathered with a Google product rather than trying to go out and find your teachers. And then you can stream live into your site.
Yeah, I just want to add a few quick things to that. You know, wooing the teacher, you know, thinking about where we fit in, because they weren't getting to us, even though we were in the curriculum. Thinking about ways that we could address a need that a teacher already had instead of creating a new expectation.
Well said.
And, you know, wooing those teachers, the second or third educators evening that we had, and there is a cost involved with that, and I'm, you know, thrilled that our foundation, you know, places importance on that. But a teacher came up to me, and she said, "Kathleen, this is so nice. Normally we just get goldfish."
Yep.
Okay, now in my head, and you're making the face that I made, in my head I'm thinking like a goldfish in a bowl. She was saying at teacher receptions they get goldfish crackers and punch, and what we had was wine and cheese. And so we were literally wooing them. It was like a first date.
Mm-hmm.
And then something else... Something else we've been able to do effectively is go to the superintendents. We've had superintendents speak at our educators' evening, because what it says to teachers in the Pulaski County Special School District when their superintendent speaks is, oh, if I put in a field trip request and my principal gives me a hard time, all I have to say is, well, when Dr. Guest spoke at the educators' evening, he encouraged us to take advantage of this resource. And in your limited edition program guide, that's a nice way of saying these are expired. They're for this school year that just ended. We actually have an endorsement from one of the assistant superintendents from the Little Rock School District. So what this is saying to, she's over elementary education, what this is saying to every elementary teacher in Little Rock School District is, if I want to go to the Clinton Library, Dr. Sadie Mitchell says I should, you know, and if you don't have, you know, if you don't have the funds to throw a party for every teacher, maybe you have the funds to throw a party for Richmond County School Board, Columbia County Superintendent, you know, get the, I mean, Richmond County is pretty big. I'm from Augusta, that, Linnea mentioned it, but so I have a vested interest in the success of his project.
Well, I think the other side of the coin, you got to make sure that you get them the information earlier. We probably weren't doing that on the front end to the degree, because teachers, particularly in Arkansas, I think, and I come from a, my mother was, she just retired, she's taught 42 years, and she was big on taking the classroom outside. And so when they started putting limitations on teachers on how many tours they could, you know, they could, or field trips they could take, I think when she retired, they could take two a year. And so you had to get in front of them sooner so that they had your information to consider before, you know, so that you could get in the, be among the choices. Because once they made those two choices, it didn't matter what you did, really, you couldn't get them there just because of you know, parameters that they didn't have any control over.
They were already committed to other. Yeah, I've actually had Jordan's mother in a teacher workshop.
Scary.
That's fun. Delightful woman.
I think all of you described wonderful creative ideas to bring educators and their school groups here. Do you have any difficulties with taking sort of the non-traditional straight line approach to education for your sites and stories that you're telling?
So more challenges we might have with administration or like board.
Yeah, either administration or the educators connecting with the ideas that you've developed to draw them in.
I think one of the biggest challenges that we have in terms of misperceptions are really working with educators in general to have them see us. Again, educators, just like the general population, tend to see us as a tourist attraction. And I've had so many people say, you're a director of education, what does education have to do with Monticello? Which I hate that, you know, in this group, right? They're like, how can somebody? But it's true. So I think first you have to make sure you have to work with them and kind of understand where they're coming from to make that connection for them. I had another thought that just left me that I might come back to, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, some of the best programs that we've done, you know, teachers have initiated, it's answering the need they already have. So they have come to us and said, we need blank. And so we've said, okay, let's make that happen. Let's find a way. Every teacher workshop that I give, I end with my contact information. And I say, look, you know, the partnership that we have with Parkview is because they approached us, and we worked together. So if you have an idea for something that you want to do with your students, it's about not saying no.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay, so you want to have a three-ring mm-hmm. circus. Okay, well, let's think about how we can tie the circus into the presidency, and we'll think about the three branches of government, and we'll use that right. old Schoolhouse Rock DVD, right. and, you know, we'll use my dad's barn, and I've got some old clothes, and let's put on a show. I mean, we never say no. I mean, when we had the Lego exhibit, we hosted a first Lego League competition. Middle school and high school kids make robots out of Legos. When I started here, I never thought that I would be proctoring a robotics competition. But people were here, and it was a need that existed, and we had the exhibit, and we made the connection, and this room was filled with robots. And just don't worry about our future. Those kids are incredibly bright, I promise.
Yeah.
Of course, robots may turn against us.
I don't know if this is what your question was intending, but over the years, I found that, you know, some of the best advice I ever got was from a teacher. She said, Roger, always teach the child, not the content. And it seems like, you know, very quickly you can determine at what level of sophistication a group of kids come into you at. By about three or four questions, you know where they're at in the content. And over the years, you just learn to adapt to that. But, you know, with teachers, it's almost like I get the brunt of what's on the back end. You know, they call at the last minute and have to cancel because the principal wouldn't approve the field trip. Or, you know, and I've had some bizarre things. You know, I've had a teacher call me and just said, could you tell me who won the Civil War? You know, click. You know, I mean, it's just, and it's the range, you know. But I guess you just kind of learn. I mean, I've just kind of learned to, it doesn't faze me anymore, I guess.
Monitor and adjust.
That's right.
Monitor and adjust. Right. Shake it off.
Hi, Mary McMurray. I don't know how to work a microphone. Okay. I really appreciate all the innovative ways that you're bringing the community to you. Are there any structural obstacles to overcome within working within institutions such as this to relate things like Lego to the presidency? I mean, you say the three-ring circus, but rules and overcoming obstacles, how do you do that?
Well, it's easier to ask forgiveness than... it is, you're right, it is challenging, but, you know, if you have a good, don't let a good idea get bogged down in bureaucracy. I mean, that's the thing that we've learned. Collectively, we can figure out a way to make it work. And so we've been able to overcome every hurdle imaginable mm-hmm. that's thrown at us. And so working mm-hmm. with the National Archives, it's been a good problem solving venture together to help try to find some of these causal links that aren't so causal. So,
right, and we have, you know, we have permanent exhibits. So, you know, we had an exhibit this summer, actually. It opened, I can't remember when, but May, maybe, mm-hmm. Oscar de la Renta.
Last year.
So it featured some First Lady's gowns. At the same time, we had an exhibit downstairs that was photographs of the 1963 March on Washington. And so you'll see in here, you'll see that we developed programs for both of them. And working with my foundation colleagues, because of what I view my mission as, civic literacy, when we did programs, I focused primarily on the programs that related to the March on Washington, and my foundation colleagues, focused on the programs that related to the Oscar exhibit. And that way we were able to kind of each feel comfortable with the product, the information that we were presenting. So it's a delicate dance, you know.
I think Aaron, and then we'll...
Because I'm the director of myself in education, and I have a, you know, it's not as much as I'd like, you know, and I promise I'm not being flip. The Super Bowl was in Indianapolis a couple of years ago, and there was so much money pumped into that with the Play 60 campaign, and then basically social studies was completely taken out of it as a testable subject in Indiana on our state testing. So basically, we've been relegated below recess. But the thing is, in this, I think Diane Ravitch wrote about this in an article, and she used Indiana as the test model. The average fourth grade classroom in Indiana spends less than 12 minutes a week on social studies. If it's not testable, it's not important. You know, we've had kids come in fifth grade, and that was the first time they'd studied that. So a lot more than I'm able to do, but... in the last year, I've made very good friends with the guy who's the social studies specialist for Indiana Department of Education, and he has started an online blog. And together, I mean, we're in contact every 3 or 4 days, and he keeps. And I actually testified in October about standards and how we need to say that history is important. We need to get kids out of the building, you know. And a lot of these kids, especially at financial risk places, this is the time when they can experience this, you know. The parents don't have the discretionary income to do this. You know, let's provide this while they're in school. So I guess I do more than I think I do, but it could be a full-time job. It really could. And, you know, but I know I'm preaching the choir, but I just think it's important.
Let's jump in. Just in case you didn't hear the question, it was how much advocacy do each of us do, and as well as how much do we think should be done at the local, state, and national level for history education?
Yeah, and I'm going to say I don't do enough, and we should all do more. That being said, I'm active, like, in our state museum organization, the Arkansas Museums Association, and we advocate just for museums, the importance of museum and museum education, and that hands-on experience, that field experience, and how that, I mean, that can make or break for a child. I will say, I remember very little history that I learned in school. What I remember is, as a Girl Scout, and they would never let you do this now because we didn't even wear helmets, a historic bike ride through downtown Augusta, visiting the Signers Monument, and, you know, those are the things that were real to me, concrete to me. And, you know, the advocacy word can sometimes be used interchangeably with lobbying. You know, as a federal employee, I'm certainly not lobbying in an official capacity ever. But that being said, I mean, we have to, you know, and the other thing is I view every student as a client and a potential funder. Mm-hmm. I look at presidential libraries frequently, Congress, I'll just say it, they get jealous and they say, "What? Why are we funding these things? Why are federal dollars maintaining these shrines?" And so I look at every kid as a future senator or representative at the federal level, at the state level. Mm-hmm. One of them is going to be in the House or the Senate and say, "Oh, well, I remember that teacher lady," because they don't know my name, that teacher lady, she said what the National Archives is and does is part of what makes our country a democracy. And I saw an Oval Office replica, and that was cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say yes to this appropriation.
That's a great way of thinking. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, so I look at all those little grimy 10-year-olds. I love them all. I do.
Well, because we're a nonprofit, we don't necessarily advocate
or lobby either.
Either, just for full disclosure, and disclaimer. But it's as simple as this. To your point about 12, you said 12 minutes they spend mm-hmm. a week on mm-hmm. social studies. The more you can get the kids outside the classroom, the time they spend with Kathleen or one of our visitors is going to equate to a semester, literally. I mean, of information, yep. And it's a touch point. They're going to remember that much more than reading it in a book or hearing it in a classroom setting. So the simple thing of getting teachers the ability to have more field trips, because there's only so many places that can go anyway. So you're just betting the odds that they're going to come here or other places. And so I think that's something that collectively we can all do as a community to advocate for that sort of thing.
So one last question. Do we have two?
All right. We talked last night about partisanship. To what extent do you deal with enthusiasms, antagonisms, preperceptions relating to the party that your president has represented?
So within school programs?
In school and beyond.
And partisanship? Of course. I was relating so strongly to President Lincoln's cottage when we were talking about politics before, because with Jefferson, anyone, everyone claims Jefferson on their side.
That's right.
They create quotes that he said. It's amazing everything that he knew was going to happen and would feel so strongly one way or the other about. So I think Kathleen and I were having an interesting conversation because she said, with Clinton being alive, she reads from his autobiography, and I said, well, Jefferson's, you know, deceased almost 200 years, but we still feel the same way. There's no way to say how he would feel necessarily about a certain issue, so we always try, and thankfully he's such a good writer, we turn to his writing to say, here's what he was thinking in a very different context and time and place. It's tricky, though, because, you know, and that's how people are making things relevant, right? They're not just doing it to needle us and be like, they're trying to process in their head, why is this important to them, and how does it relate to their values and beliefs? Right. So sometimes it's almost getting them to talk a little more about that than say, like, well, yes, clearly Jefferson was a, you know.
Well, we look at it as presidential libraries transcend politics, and we keep pushing that and pushing that and pushing that, and by having temporary exhibits like baseball, for example. Kurt's in here, I think he was instrumental in that one. But that's bringing people here who may or may not particularly like President Clinton, have his same ideology, that sort of thing. We had a bunch of old white men come through here. And you know what? Seeing is believing, though. They say, you know what, this place is not all about politics at all. And so it's educational. And so that's the kind of thing that, from an Arkansas perspective, with the changing of the culture and that sort of thing, that's how we overcome those obstacles.
Yeah, and
word here, and then I got noticed that.
I was just going to say quickly, one of the challenges we face with teachers is they want to tell me how much they love President Clinton, and I can't really engage in that conversation. I try to tell them I'm not here to have your students think one way or the other about President Clinton, but rather to think about the presidency as a whole, and to get them to kind of let's not talk about that. Let's talk with your students about what the president is and does. Let's not get political. But it's usually on the they want to let me know how much they like him.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for being here for the session.
My voice can usually carry without this anyway. Guess what? Lunch is ready. No, you guys can stay, actually, but lunch is ready. All your peers from the other group are waiting. That's why I gave them the high sign. So continue the conversation through lunch. We do have some door prizes. You get a chance to go see, but those are going to be announced from here. Must be present to win. Go see the museum. If you haven't signed up for the tours, do that now as well. You're basically free until we reconvene at 3. Hold on, I should have pulled my notes out before I started this conversation. 3:30, 3:45. Okay, you're here. 3:45, we start another general session.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for coming.